Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Build
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
So, welcome to the show, listener. Welcome to the show, colleagues, friends, Romans. I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. And over there is Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And over there is Anthony Evans.
Hi.
We get together and talk about films in a spoiler-filled manner, not for anyone's benefit, but just because we want to, and that's what the show is. So guys, this week's film is Sonatine. I picked it. It is a Beat Takeshi film, or Takeshi Kitano, if you want to call him by his non-nickname, which I don't, because I know him personally. No, because I'm a fanboy of his, so we get the privilege of calling him Beat, as can anyone. I don't really know why he's called Beat Takeshi, but it's his film, and I don't have any more details, so I should probably pass to someone who can tell you more details about the film we watched, like you, Abby.
Okay, Sonatine is from 1993. It was written and directed by Takeshi Kitano. It stars Takeshi himself. Aya Kokumai, Tetsu Watanabe, Masanobu Kasumura, Susumu Terayama, Ren Oshugi, Tonbo Sushi, Kenichi Yahima, I can't say the last one.
We don't even know if you said any of those correctly, to be honest.
Anthony, how do you say E-I-J-I?
A-G.
A-G.
Maybe. Well, whoever they are, thanks for all being Japanese and in the film, but sorry if we got your name wrong. So, I mean, I'm sure people are going, oh, I love all those actors, and you should, because some of them are really good actors. They're in a bunch of good Japanese movies, possibly some Western movies too. But the main reason for my picking this was I really like Takeshi. I think he's a great director, an interesting performer. And he's got a large repertoire of sort of Clint Eastwood of Japan type roles. There's a lot of staring. He's got a weird comedy side. And he brought us one of the best game shows ever, Takeshi's Castle, where people, well, mainly the Japanese, run around and fall down various ridiculous obstacles and, you know, do all kinds of weird stuff in strange costumes and whatnot. How much do you guys know about Beat Takeshi? Let's start with Anthony, because I realise I should, you know, you guys don't know which one I'm asking. But yes, what do you guys know about Beat Takeshi?
Honestly, not much, other than that he is a director and star of Japanese movies. I can't actually recall seeing any other films of his other than this. So, yeah, I'm a little in the dark over here, I guess.
You've seen Takeshi's Castle, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's not especially representative, though, is it?
No, you wouldn't think someone, you know, responsible in part for a wacky, ridiculous, health and safety-ignoring game show like Takeshi's Castle has anything to do with, sort of, Japanese
Actually,
gangster films and stuff.
I'm going to rescind what I just said, because I'll go into what I knew about him. I knew that in Japan, he was a comedian first.
Really?
So the fact that he did do Takeshi's Castle made more sense to them than him making gangster movies.
I mean, he clearly has a sense of humour, but sometimes I think it's a sense of humour that no one else obviously has. Like, some of his jokes are quite subtle or weird, and, like, I don't know, I've seen a bunch of his films now, and, I just wanted to pick something that was fairly representative, because this is written, directed, and starring him, and it's pretty like the sort of thing you'd expect. It's a Yakuza movie, but it's a little bit different to just regular gangster films. I think the most Western thing he made was a film called Brother, and that's about him coming over, being this notorious Japanese gangster that helps a really rubbish gang out and elevates them to success. But there's loads of things he's famous for. But we won't go into his resume. We'll just talk about Sonatine for now. Mm. I've seen a lot of Takeshi stuff because I kind of just found him compelling. I don't know. He's got some art house rubbish, or arthouse genius. I can't tell which sometimes with his more arthouse things. But he does a lot of gangster stuff and a lot of just sort of strange things. But anyway, Sonatine, you guys, Anthony's already said he hasn't seen much. Have you seen much of his catalogue, Abby, of things?
The very first thing I would have seen him in would be Merry Christmas to Lawrence.
Yeah.
After that, I don't know when I started picking up more.
It was probably my fault.
I think a fairly late addition to my film knowledge is Pete Takeshi. But welcome. Enjoy him very much.
Yeah. It's one of those things, you see him in this role here or that role. He's in Battle Royale, famously. I think that's also one of his biggest roles. Mm. I saw him in that, and I saw him in a couple of things, and I was like, I've got to see more. And it turns out there's quite a few to choose from. You've seen Battle Royale, though, Anthony, right?
Yes, I didn't realise you were in it. Who is he playing in?
He's the teacher who's sort of in charge of them all and the island or whatever they're on.
Okay.
Gets weirdly infatuated with one of them. Starts doing weird paintings, I think. That's his shtick. I think he eats cookies as well of that girl. That's his role. I'm recalling a lot of his roles now. And yeah, never mind. So on the scene, though, we've all watched it now. Shall I just ask initial reactions? I mean, you know, I know I like it, but what about you, Anthony?
It's an odd little one. I have to admit, the first attempt to watch it ended in me falling asleep. Not because it's a boring film or anything like that. Weirdly, it contains a lot of violence. But no, it's a rather slow-paced, gentle film. And it kind of catches you off guard.
Yeah, it's one of the gentlest gangster movies I've ever seen.
And it's odd, because that seems incongruous with the violence in it, because there is some, but it's a little bit like budget 90s violence at times. But, it has the amount of killing you'd expect of a gangster movie, at least I would expect. But it is oddly less about, you know, Yakuza gang warfare, because it is about that, but it is more about waiting around and killing time on the beach. Coming up with silly games to play while you just wait out your time. So it's a kind of strange film in that regard, that it's just slow-paced and quiet, and there's not a lot of dialogue for many scenes, because it kind of... Pete Takeshi seems fond of just looking at people making no expression. Not like, just let's just hold on them, just saying nothing, doing nothing, and staring. He often does it in all of his films. His trademark is sort of just standing there looking a bit blank, but in a kind of intimidating way. I don't know, but it's a strange one. I can see why you'd sort of fall asleep, especially like on a Sunday afternoon trying to watch it, which I think you when you tried, you know, you just, it's not a good environment to watch a gentle foreign film about nothing but also gang warfare. I don't know.
The whole film kind of does kind of flow very dreamlike itself.
That's probably his art outside coming through and trying to be a bit more interesting and pretentious. But what about you, Abby?
It was unsettling to find it so charming. It's like, there aren't many... No, I'm going to say I can't think of any gangster movies that I would describe as charming.
Yeah, because in a way, the characters that are in the film, in the main roles, are kind of underdogs towards the end. At the start, they're just regular gangsters going about their business. But by the end, the group that has formed around Takeshi's character are kind of surviving and underdogs in the story.
You've reminded me of something. There's something from 1971 by somebody called Kinji Fukasaku. He made Sympathy for the Underdog, which heavily influenced this film. I know nothing about that movie, but that was something that I read.
Okay.
So your exact use of underdog would suggest that he did it well.
Sure, right. Yeah, okay. So the film opens with some rather pedestrian setting up of Yakuza in Tokyo stuff. Sort of, let's go to a place where some mafia-style intimidation must go down, And they're just sort of plainly open with... is it a place that they played some kind of variation on dominoes or something?
Yeah, it was Mahjong.
Oh, so there's a Mahjong club or something that they're trying to get a cut of the profits from. Beat Takeshi's Yakuza family. Mm. It's a bit confusing, because one of the other main characters in the Yakuza, which Beat Takeshi's character is a member of, is called Takeshi, and...
No, he isn't.
Is he not?
He's called Takahashi, which is close.
Oh.
I will give you that.
Well, I'm sorry.
It's a little bit like Smith and Smythe, I guess.
I suppose so, but I'm still wrong. Well, it confused me anyway, and... I think Takeshi's character is called Mr...
Murakawa. Yeah.
Okay, well, Mr. Murakawa is, what would you guys say, somewhere middling to top of the Yakuza food chain? How does it... I don't know, really know. Does anyone know anything about how the Yakuza works? At least in fiction.
No, I don't.
I suppose it must have a similar structure and hierarchy to, Mafia... families, perhaps.
Yeah.
And it is a clan system as well, which would suggest that it is.
Yeah, so he's one of the...
He's the Don.
Sorry?
No, he's not as high as the Don. He was slightly lower than the Don.
He's at least a few pegs down, I think, because he's got a boss who he shouldn't really have beaten up. And that guy's got a boss. Well, anyway, Beat Takeshi's some kind of mid-level boss, we think, of the Yakuza in Tokyo. And he is trying to intimidate the Mahjong club owner guy, if that is a thing. Is that a thing?
I guess so.
And that guy's having none of it. He's quite rude. And you should be careful what you say to people who are willing to kill for money, because they might just, take offence. And later on he does. But for now, they just set up this sort of pedestrian Yakuza Tokyo world of back alley gamblers and things, don't they?
Mm.
And we just sort of given that as a sort of introduction and shown that there's some kind of potential gang warfare brewing elsewhere that the mob bosses are concerned about. And that brings in the character you correctly called Takahashi. Right. And he's sort of the boss of Beat Takeshi, and they have issues. How would you guys recall this bit?
I'll talk about the relationship in general rather than what happened specifically when.
Yeah, okay.
But like the rest of the time, Takeshi's character deals with it in an extremely childish way. I don't like you, I'm going to beat you up in a toilet, is what essentially happens.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I mean, it's one of the first proper... subtly funny bits as well, because he beats up this guy he's probably not supposed to, is probably his boss, because he's suspicious of his motivations or just annoyed that he's being forced to do something he's not interested in, and he leaves him in the toilet with people trying to get in, and is just sort of bumping into the guy as he lies there unconscious. I think that was representative of the humour throughout. Did you guys see that bit as funny, or were you like, whatevs?
It was funny. It's still... Every time Beat Takeshi puts a joke into his gangster movies, it takes you by surprise, because you don't think that he can.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a tad subtle, but then it's not a comedy, so, But the general premise is that Beat Takeshi's character and a ragtag group of Yakuza have to go to Okinawa to settle some kind of gang dispute between affiliated gangs with the main Yakuza.
Mm.
And which is weird, because when I was watching this the first time, I was also playing the video game Yakuza 3, and that plot is surprisingly similar. I mean, Yakuza 3 is about like a Tokyo-based beat-em-up sort of Yakuza world, and then you get sent to a sort of rural beach hut to hang out in for a while. And in Yakuza 3, the guy seems mainly to be caught up with beach games and looking after loads of children. And in this, Beat Takeshi has a similar role. He's sort of looking after younger guys and killing time on the beach. It had too many parallels with that video game. Not enough smacking people over the head with a bike, but, Beat Takeshi could have put that in the film and it would have fitted right in. But it, I don't know. You get put in Okinawa, and it's about meeting up. Oh, actually, the first kind of interesting scene, I think, is when you get to see the kind of ragtag group put together. What did you guys make of the scene where all the young guys turn up and whatnot?
You mean the scene with the crane?
Oh, we've missed that out. I totally forgot about that bit. No, yeah, there is a...
Okay, yeah. I thought we might skip past there.
You could bring it up, though.
Well, I can't quite remember who the guy is. Someone they're chasing.
It's the Mayong dude.
Oh, yes, of course. So, well, they as punishment for not behaving, I guess, they tie him to a crane and lower him into the lake or the river or whatever it is.
And proceed to have quite a casual chat about business while the guy is drowning. But then they pull him out after 2 minutes because that's the estimated time that he can survive. But then, you know...
Which is a long time.
But he does live, initially. And then they try three. And he's obviously not going to make it beyond three. But they actually go over the 3 minutes just idly chatting anyway, which I thought was a nice thing. Just, it's been three, isn't it? Yeah, or we should pull him out. Oh, he is dead. Anyway, we should get to Okinawa and deal with this nonsense that we've been told to deal with. So
it was the sort of pedestrianness of everything for them, where it's like, oh, that guy's dead. Clean it up, would you? Thanks. I'm off for a bit. See ya.
Yeah, some of the older gangsters seem to be a bit, like, tired of everything, and I think Takeshi wants to retire or something, and it's all a bit, this is normal stuff. I'm not fazed by it anymore. But then we're introduced to some younger guys, some seemingly potential upcomers, like, just young guys who want to try and make a name for themselves in the crime world. And they're basically, like, there's basically three or four of them in, like, crappy casual t-shirts and things just assembled in the office with some more haggard, older-looking Yakuza guys. And there's a bit of kerfuffle.
That was another one of the things I liked about this, is just sort of office-based crime. Where... No, they didn't meet in some cool bar. They didn't meet in some interesting looking under a bridge. They have an office. It's rubbish. They go there and they use it.
Yeah.
It's so normal.
Everything's so 90s because of the era, and it's just sort of cheap. Sort of, probably, chances are they had locations that were like not non-used offices to use, so that was probably handy for the filming because it's probably quite low budget. But it does have a weird, believable quality to it. Like, well, if you're going to commit crimes that are sort of mainly phoning people up and threatening them and stuff, you need an office. You don't need, you know, cool stuff everywhere. You know, you want to do business and make profit. But it does have a kind of weird office feel. A lot of the scenes take part in these sort of rubbishy-looking locations.
Yeah.
But does anyone want to describe the scene that unfolds, which I thought was quite a funny and bold little bit to sort of set up some of these younger guys?
Well, it's just one of the older... members of the gang just kind of attempts to intimidate one of the younger ones, I guess. And he ends up getting stabbed for it.
And it goes weirdly because the guy, like, pulls out a knife and just stabs him, just, like, to show him who's boss. And then this, the fight breaks out. And then all the sort of older bosses are just sort of staring at everyone fight.
The scene really cements the kind of just passiveness of a lot of the shots where there are just people staring, like people are being shot and killed around them, and they're just staring very blankly off screen.
Yeah, and it is like that kind of thing works well for all of the comedy throughout. Is it's usually just something weird happens, and then cut to someone staring. Like, but I liked it because later on, when they're all on a bus together, The guy who's been stabbed and took it rather well, he just got stabbed and sort of took it and then got a bit cross, but basically didn't overreact, or kind of underreacted to him being stabbed. But the young guy and the bald guy who got stabbed were just sitting next to each other on the bus, and then the young guy's eating a lollipop, like an ice lolly, and he just offers it, like asks him if he wants a lolly or whatever, and the guy's like, no, my stomach hurts from where you stabbed me. So I just like those little arguments and things that happen throughout. But, you know, the bus thing, basically we cut to the important bit, which is they're being coached out. It takes a kind of low-budgety feel all the way through, that everything is just so sort of... Like, it's not cool in any way, is it?
No.
Everything's just a little bit naff, and even, like, the older bosses are not cool. They're just sort of older and successful, but still wearing rubbish Hawaiian shirts or dingy, grubby vests and stuff, and looking a bit... dirge.
Oh, the Hawaiian shirts. Oh. we won't really get onto those till the beach hut, but they're coming.
No, you can bring them up now, because the iconography of Yakuza is very weird, because in films, which is the main representation we get of them in our lives, is it's dudes who wear cheap suits, usually in horrible pastels or just dark, and colourful shirts. But they also like wearing like Hawaiian patterns, and they have those weird like all-covering back tattoos that slightly crawl around the front a bit. So basically, Yakuza dudes have terrible tastes in shirts, cheap suits, and have incredible back murals. Seems to be the thing with Yakuza guys. It seems a trope that happens in many films. And in this, there are some tremendous shirts. And a couple of good back tattoos. What did you guys make? I mean, you mentioned the shirts were horrible, Abby.
Most of the clothing was horrible in this.
It was partially era, but I think the rest of it was authorial choice. He just must have gone into a shop and go, "That is the most disgusting shirt I've ever seen. I want it.
Yeah.
I need it."
Well, they make a joke of it. Beat Takeshi gives someone a hard time for having a terrible shirt that's not really his. Like, one guy has, when they're hiding out later on, a guy has to bring more clothes for them, and he brings some putrid shirts in fairness. Like, and so giving one guy hassle about his horrible shirt is a bit harsh, considering most of them are wearing disgusting clothes. But I think it's an interesting choice, and an aesthetic that sort of says Yakuza now that we've established it in fiction. But yeah, the interesting part on the coach, other than the lollipop thing, is we get introduced to the gang that they're helping. There's two rival gangs in Okinawa. One of them is affiliated with Beat Takeshi's group, and they get on the bus, a big coach of them, and they go into the town or whatever, and it's just hi, I'm the guy. Like, the leader seems to be in his 40s or 50s, have a moustache, and just plays everything just downplayed and sort of dry, and just, I don't know. And it's really weird later when he's drunk and he likes to dance. What did you guys make of that guy, like, in this film?
You sort of don't notice him at first, because he's just sort of being average business dude. But then later on you do go, is that the guy from the Yesters? Being a little bit weird on his own.
And he's just, he has this reoccurring thing where he dances, where they're in a bar and he's a bit drunk. And he's, like, there's geisha-type women doing some kind of dance thing in hats and with weird, traditional-looking clothes on. And he's sort of drunkenly dancing on his own in a traditional way, while everyone else is just chatting and drinking and eating. And they sort of drag him back to the table. And then later on, he's helping... there's a scene where two young Yakuza guys are sort of makeshift dressed up as dancers with, wicker baskets on their heads or something. And he's, choreographing them dancing, and he's, clicking shells together and getting annoyed with them when they're, not enjoying it enough. I just thought he's a really quirky, weird guy. And he's just so cerebral the rest of the time and just, you know, not bothered. Even when people are dying around him, he's like, shrug. But they introduce this group from Okinawa, and they take them to their kind of headquarters, which was a dingy office. And we get presented with what, you know, they try and decide what they're going to do. Does anyone recall what happens at this point?
There's the singular bullet to show that there is trouble in Okinawa.
Yeah, that's right.
There's the bullet which leads to the dud grenade, which leads to the not dud grenade.
Yeah, we have a very quiet escalation of things. Because, you know, if we say bullets and grenades, why did Anthony fall asleep? But it's because it's very weird. It just sort of happens in a... So, what are we going to do? There's a pink bag full of weapons. What was that smash? Oh, yeah, that'll be the Anan gang who we're rivals with. They're just saying, oi, we don't like that a bunch of Yakuza have just turned up. It happens all the time. It's fine. And it's just like, oh. And then, like you say, a dud grenade is the way they decide to get back. They go to the rival's office or whatever and drop a grenade that doesn't work. And go,
they don't know it's not going to work.
Yeah.
We should point that out.
And then a lot of waiting happens. A lot of comedy waiting, I think. Like, there's a few interesting shots where people are just waiting in their cars or in the streets, doing nothing, and we just stare at them for a bit, waiting. And that happens off and on.
Yeah, this film kind of reminded me of the kind of Tarantino style, where you're shown the kind of in-between bits of the obvious action that you're expecting.
I know what you mean, yeah.
The kind of slower, slightly introvert bits in the middle that doesn't glamorize the whole thing.
Whereas,
that makes it very normal.
Yeah, where Tarantino would perhaps fill it with loads of fast-paced dialogue, B. Takeshi goes, nah, we'll just have the odd sentence here and then, but mainly say nothing in those in those moments.
Although there is a lot of staring into space in Jackie Brown.
There is.
You can watch that film and there will just be slow pans in while people stare. It's amazing all the way through. But yeah,
and it's just you know, the kind of like low level gangsters just being slightly incompetent in what they're doing kind of thing. I suppose this is about the same time as Reservoir Dogs came out.
Yeah,
presumably. So,
I don't want to infer any kind of like referencing between the two, because I suppose they would have come out at the same time. But, you know, just, you know, they're quite similar.
Reservoir Dogs was the year before, so presumably they would have actually seen each other.
But it was from the same era, so there is going to be, you know, similarities in tone and what people wanted to do or were trying to do with the genre of movies like this. And it is just oddly quiet, despite a gang rivalry escalating. Most of the time, it isn't that action-packed. When a successful attack happens and our little group of Yakuzas are bombed, it just happens in a weird moment of, oh, do you have a cigarette? Yeah. Just, oh, suddenly there's action when we didn't expect it. Like, and it kind of catches you off guard and then it's done. And it's just people going, oh, they're dead. What are we going to do now?
For something that is as quiet as this is, I never feel like I'm surprised, but I'm constantly surprised. I was like, oh, this thing has happened. Oh, that guy's dead. Oh, this has gone on. But you still have this overwhelming feeling of, I am so relaxed right now.
Yeah. It slows the pace down and it just calms you. And you just, you know, you can't be expecting anything because it doesn't, like, music doesn't kick in to hint, oh, something's going to happen. It just happens. Like, there's a scene later when they're in a bar sort of having another meeting and sort of just being at a bar in Okinawa, and another assassination attempt happens, and there's a bit of tension, like a few people are coming into the bar, and it's sort of, the camera sort of stays on different people and suggests someone's going to be an assassin, but all that sort of happens is they're looking at a couple of, like, young guys, like three young guys come in and go, should we buy a beer? just one beer for the three of you, that's it. You just have a beer, you young men. And then all of a sudden, some people sitting at another table start shooting up the bar and killing a few more of Takeshi's guys, you know? In one of the worst pieces of editing as well, there's like, one guy's killed, I watched it a second time, and it's just, it cuts back and it's like, some guy's got a bloodied shirt, and then they cut again and it's sort of him being shot, and it's just really appalling bit of editing together the scene, or directing, or possibly, I don't know what went wrong, but it looked awful in that particular bit. Did anyone else notice at that point how shabby it was?
I think it went by too fast for me.
There's a general sense of, I don't know how to put this, but, like, I don't know if it was the same with you. I hope it wasn't, like, a faulty copy I was watching, but, like, some of the sound in the film was really off.
Do you mean on a technical sense, or just occasionally, like, there would be something up with it?
Like, occasionally there'd be something, like, it kind of distorted and then kind of like a white noise in the background.
That might have been you. I didn't pick up on anything myself.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't know.
No,
I don't
know. It kind of worked, because it was like, it was a, you know, it's a weird film, and... You know, not a lot happening, and then this music is really distorted, and it kind of fits in with kind of the tone of what's going on. But maybe it was just a fault.
It could have been that way. Like, I'm not much for noticing things. If it works, if something's really working, I won't pick up on it.
Yeah, there is some interesting music in the background at times. It isn't just blank of nothing. It does have it there. And it is a little odd at times. I had a comparison, I just can't remember what it was now. But I think occasionally there's an amateurness that comes through in the, you haven't filmed this right because it won't cut together no matter what you do. Or like a low budgetness, like some of the gun sounds were particularly bad. So
yeah, that's the kind of thing I was like talking about. The whole, like it seems like a decision almost that some of the editing and sound effects are like deliberately... underdone.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's directorial decisions to be different and to not just be conventional, and other times I think it's maybe budget limitations as well. Like, I think it's part Takeshi's vision and part, well, what can you do? We just have to roll with it. So, you know, I think it adds an interesting quality, but there are amateur times that show through in the film. But yeah, after the shootout and a few more of the group of guys are gone, they go into hiding. They have to kind of, you know, obviously up against a big problem. And it's weird because the boss of that group has basically gone, oh, it's not much of a problem, really. It's just the usual sort of gang rivalry, low-level stuff. And there's a sort of hint that there's maybe some conspiratorial aspect to this, that maybe they've been sent there unnecessarily, but then clearly it is necessary because they're being under attack. But you know.
I don't know if it's maybe a little lost in translation thing for me, but I couldn't really tell if the respective bosses, the local one and the one up in Tokyo, were deceiving him.
Yeah, they could have been in cahoots, couldn't they?
Because I couldn't glean anything from their
reactions.
Body language and expression.
Yeah, I think because later on there is a reveal that there was more to it, at that point we're just sort of, you know, reacting to everything as the characters in the situation do. But there is hints of, like, was there any need for us to be here? And then as more of them get killed off, it's like, hang on, we have to, you know, give up. They sort of, the group splits into two, some go back to Tokyo, they just split up, and we follow... beat Takeshi's guys and him to someone's like friend's beach house or beach hut, sort of like a rural sort of down a country lane beachside house, isn't it? And it hasn't got running water. It's a bit sort of lacking in the amenities, but it's out of the way enough to not be, you know, a location that they could be found at, isn't it?
Mm.
This is a lot like the game Yakuza. There's like a whole... Wait, I thought we were Yakuza. Why are we in a weird beachside hut for so long looking after young people? Like, it's so weird how it parallels. I don't know why I'm bringing it up, because it's not relevant. Apart from, it is relevant. And what am I even saying? I don't know why I bring it up, really. But anyway, the sort of latter half of the film is all about the Yakuza killing time at the beach. That's basically the latter half. Until they get found out and, you know, there's more assassination attempts, isn't it?
Yes. So, yeah, the film takes a slightly strange turn from here on because of that.
There's a whole host of beachside games and things you can do to amuse yourself. Because we've basically got Beat Takeshi, his sort of... the guy underneath him, a sort of, like, lieutenant-type guy, who's... in loads of Beat Takeshi films, he's in loads of films with him and is like must be a good friend or a colleague of Beat Takeshi because he appears in nearly every film he's got. But the two of them and one other older guy and the mustachioed boss is still there, I think. And then there's a couple of younger guys from Yokonawa who are still with them, who haven't been killed yet. And it's mainly them just killing time here. And there's loads of games they play. Like, shoot the can off of your head is one game.
From point blank range, yeah.
Their reaction to... there's lots of really well-observed bits in this. Like, the guy's reaction to a bullet flying past his face was so... Because he was a Yakuza, his reaction was more akin to someone maybe flicking a little rock past you and then he hit your eye. He was like, I saw that go past my face! What are you doing?
Yeah, it's like he was kind of... surprised that the guy was such a bad shot. Like, just, what are you doing? Like, you just went past my head. You're meant to shoot the can. Why are you so rubbish? Like, it should be easy. Like, I don't know. But B. Takeshi thinks this game isn't, you know, exciting enough. So he decides to just play a sort of weird roulette, Russian roulette. He, like, empties the gun but one bullet, seemingly. And then they play, like, man's out until they've used up all the bullets. And there's one left. And he loses. And he actually does, like, go... he goes to pull the trigger on himself. And they're like, no, don't do that! And then he just does it anyway. And shows he's tricked them. There's no, like... that he's emptied them all out and stuff. That's how... just how Beat Takeshi gets his kicks. Making people think he's going to commit suicide.
But you always have him on this, like, the edge of... You're never quite sure whether he's, like... crazy, or whether he knows what's going on. It's just a kind of weird performance.
Bit off, isn't he? Yeah.
He always plays this weird in-between place between someone who's joking and someone who's very serious and a bit of a psychopath. Like, and he does that in loads of roles. He's always like, I don't know how to take you. It's always a bit more tense and kind of weird. Which is perfect for a kind of mid-level gangster, I reckon. Just a little bit sick and a bit of a joker, but also serious because you can't mess with him because he's your boss kind of thing. But he can mess with you, and he likes doing it. I think my thoughts go to the time where he's on the beach late at night, and he calls them all for a meeting on the beach, and he tells one guy to go around because there's a hole that he's covered up, and He gets them to come, and they're obviously suspicious. I think, Abby, you were talking to me about it when we were watching it. You were just saying his reaction was just like, you know, it would be.
It's just so petty. It's so perfectly absurd for something so petty. When you're bored, you'll do anything.
And just the fact that they're clearly on to him, that it's weird that he's calling him to the beach, and he's like, no, 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 just, I'll tell you, come over here quickly, and then I'll tell you. Like, he hasn't even got a plausible excuse. He's quite clearly go to them, but they don't see it coming. They fall in the hole in the beach. Ha 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 ha.
Before we go back to their business.
Yeah.
Before we go through all the games, is there anyone in particular that stuck out for you, Anthony? So we can give it some proper time.
Well, the thing that most stood out for me in particular was the sumo wrestling bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember now. Where they did the little paper one, and then later on they did the life-size one, but like it was a paper one.
Yeah, but like before that, they like set up a sumo wrestling ring and then pretended to go through the motions of sumo wrestling for a long time.
Lots of crouching and throwing like pretend salt in the ring and stuff.
Yeah, so that one was a bit strange, but it did pay off very nicely with the kind of visual joke of the toy fighters.
It made me think of something at the time where, you know how in our country at school you sort of sample a lot of different sports but in no particular way? So you might do a bit of runners, a bit of football, a bit of this, a bit of that. Do you think in Japanese schools they sort of sample sumo when they're quite young?
Perhaps.
Because that would be the cutest thing.
Perhaps. Plus, I'm guessing in this film it's just, you know, sumo wrestling is quite a big thing. So yeah. Most people would see it. But I can imagine that happening, I guess.
Well, sumo wrestlers are usually quite big things. So, but yeah, it's kind of like gym in the spring and then sumo wrestling in the fall. Like, depends what, you know, get the horse out or get the sumo ring out, depending on what's, you know, whether it's half term or not.
But yes, we have Takeshi, like, just out on the beach one night, I guess, boredly exploring, and then comes across someone being raped and molested, and kind of very casually sort of intervenes, perhaps. You're not quite sure.
I think he's going to, but he's very, like, casual about it and doesn't do much other than, like, stop the guy and then... He just nuts him. And the guy, like, comes up with, like, a flick knife. Flick knife first, he stands up, threatens Beat Takeshi, and then Beat Takeshi, you know, not going to take that stuff, so deads him.
Oh, that's another one of the great reactions in this movie, is when Beat Takeshi shoots that guy, the guy's going around, he's saying, I didn't mean it!
Yeah. And that kind of makes the girl friendly with him and kind of not his girlfriend, but she starts walking away the next day or whatever. But then she comes back and is just sort of friends with Takeshi and them and hangs out with them and is sort of the now semi-girlfriend of Beat Takeshi.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's like, you're not quite sure what either of them are thinking.
She likes
what their motives are.
Yeah, she likes tough guys and he saved her.
Sort of.
Yeah, and it. Maybe. Yeah, well, he did. But in a quite extreme way. Like, I'm not even sure if it was, like, maybe her partner that he killed as well. So, it's a bit weird, a relationship. But, you know, they're all sort of just chilling out in this rural bit of Okinawa.
It's not like he's got anywhere else to go. So, if she comes over, what is he going to do? Leave?
I think he probably likes the company. So it's not a sort of overly obvious relationship so much as it's just sort of implied that they're together now. But you know, it's just more fun and games at the beach, basically. Like you mentioned the sumo wrestling and the paper wrestling that it imitated, and how they were basically larking about rather than actually wrestling. Because I think it's like 2-on-1 for one fight, and then they're kind of mucking about more than fighting and jutting up and down, pretending to be the paper sumos that we saw earlier. And then there's a funny scene that I like, which is one guy's reading a magazine, like older guy, and the younger kid has some kind of doll, and he's just saying weird stuff to the older guy while he's trying to read, like, oh, I'm going to fight you. Like, and he says, pew, 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 you killed my woman. Like, I'm going to break your neck. And, like, he, like, kisses him on the cheek with the doll and stuff. He's just clearly just prattling about. And the other guy's just like, go away. No, get off. And then he eventually, like, cracks and laughs as well. But it's just that properly well-observed boredom mucking around I like. What other games do they play? They play Frisbee, don't they?
Then Clay Pigeon Frisbee. Yeah.
Yeah, Clay Pigeon Frisbee. Yeah. That's a good game. Good game. Well, there's a bunch of little things that are just little anecdotal points as well. Like, because they have no running water, they have to go fetch it, and it sort of runs out at the well or whatever. And so the older guy gets to have a shower, whereas the younger guys, like, don't get to. And he's like, yeah, you'll just have to wait till it rains. And then they actually get a bit of rain, and they you know, get the shampoo and soap up outside. And then it stops raining, and they're just covered in suds. And you're just going to go, how has a Yakuza film got a moment like this? This is more touching family moment, you know? It's that kind of weird little bits of comedy in there throughout. I'm sure there were more. They have a weird fight with fireworks for one scene. Does it seem incredibly dangerous to you guys, or...?
I know that on... Was it fireworks night this year?
Could
it was incredibly annoying when people were playing fireworks on the beach when we were trying to walk past.
Yeah, they were trying to set off fireworks on the ground, like, dangerously and at each other. And this is similar. They have, like, sticks that fire intermittent fireworks out of, and they're sort of shooting them back at each other from their little makeshift bases. And it's just kind of cute and silly and dangerous. But then the Yakuza, they're hard. They've been playing, you know, shoot the can off my head earlier. Can you guys think of any others? I mean, there's more attempts at the hall gag as well. Like, Takeshi gets two of them on the way down. Then he gets one more going, oh, there's no more. Don't worry about where you're stepping. Instantly, the guy falls in another tiny hole. And then right at the end, a kind of sweet moment with that woman you guys brought up. She actually is just playing with a single firework on her own on the beach when she's waiting. And then she falls in a hole. And it's just like, oh, F you. So there's all these little tiny pranks going on. Can you guys think of any others? Have I missed out?
Other than intermittent dancing, not really. I can't think of anything right off my head.
I can't think of anything either. It is just... What's the word I'm looking for? Not a lesson in boredom. It's a clinic in how to portray boredom.
Yeah, just a bunch of men and boys mucking around for days on end in a rural setting at the beach, just killing time and nearly killing each other, you know? And I guess the excitement comes into it again. There's deals trying to be set up. Occasionally a guy is coming from the... like, wherever they were originally, and, like, coming with messages saying, you know, trying to have a peace or a truce or whatever. And that does, like... There's kind of a negotiation going on one of the roads, and an assassin comes and kills a bunch of the gang then, doesn't he? Like there's a fisherman, isn't there? And he's an assassin that's trying to, like, kill basically all of Takeshi's guys and their allies, isn't it?
He's the least assassin-looking dude ever.
Well, that's how you get away with it. You don't rock up in, like, a white robe with spikes in your wrists. Like, you look like a schmo, and then you just whip out your gun and shoot. I don't know what whistle means. You shoot people, you know? So you wouldn't suspect the fishing guy of being an assassin, you're saying?
I think that's why I didn't know what he was about at first. It's just like, who's this fishing dude? Why aren't we seeing him doing any fishing or anything else? And it started to bug me a little bit, and then finally it paid off. And I was like, oh, I see. Really? You?
See, speaking of fishing, like, the poster, or one of the poster images, is, and at the start of the film, is a picture of a blue fish on, like, a fishing spike or something. And I don't really, like, I don't really understand what that... Maybe it's a visual metaphor, but I don't really get the imagery of a blue fish on a spike thing. Do you guys understand that?
No.
Do you even recall what I'm on?
No. Okay. I saw the picture recently.
It was just at the start, it was the opener, and it said sonatine. I don't even know what sonatine means. Do you have any information about what the word sonatine is about?
Nope.
I tried to look it up earlier, but the word's French, so everything I looked up was also in French. It was really annoying. But I think it's some kind of singer.
Okay. So maybe it's a preemptor to Sopranos. I don't know. Well, anyway, that mystery aside, it escalates with this fisherman who turns up and again, he's trying to kill the key group that we're following now. And while they're praying, while they're playing Frisbee, poor red-shirted guy. Well, he wasn't always red-shirted, but like all red shirts, he has to die. and he gets killed because they're playing Frisbee. And there's seemingly two of them on the beach, but Takeshi and his girlfriend thing are sitting by a boat. So I guess the fisherman guy doesn't see them. So he ends up killing just one of the guys playing Frisbee. And then the other guy runs off and, like, he just goes, ah, that'll do. That's weird. I mean, surely they were talking and he must have heard them or seen, like, four of them go to the beach. I didn't really understand how they got away with that. It was just a weird tense moment, I guess, while... the guy just drops dead in front of the couple, and they just have to be quiet.
Just continue staring blankly into the distance.
If in doubt, blank it out. That's the rule of thumb.
So yeah, I suppose then the plot comes back and ruins all their fun at the beach.
Poor things.
Yeah, because at some point they have to make the decision to do something about it. And I think they find out where... Do they find out that they're being betrayed, or that they find out where the guy they're looking for is? What's the deal with that? You know, the scene where they get a shootout in a lift. What happens there?
That happens after they find out that the truce hasn't been made and the war is going to keep going on. So I think they go and find out just what's going on in general.
Yeah.
And then by torturing Takahashi, they find out that they've been deceived.
Ah, but before they can torture him, they have to find him in the hotel that he's supposed to be staying at. And what I liked about the scene where they find out what's going on and try and get to the guy that they, you know, either want to kill or, you know, make a truce with, is they go to the wrong apartment. They look for the guy and it's just someone else who's got the same name, and they're just like, oh, damn. And they go to the lift then and try and look for him elsewhere in the building. And they just, that would have been left out of any other film. Maybe Tarantino would have put it in, had a funny conversation on the way. But B. Takeshi puts it in nevertheless. Just as a moment of, oh, wrong way. Like, I thought that was funny. And then they have a weird little shootout in the lift then, because just accidentally, I think, B. Takeshi's kind of rival and boss comes in with the assassin, doesn't he? The fisherman guy. And they have a really close counters, point-blank shootout.
I believe that is coincidence, yes.
But what I liked is Takeshi just kind of ducks behind one of his guys a bit. And they all just really shoot straight at each other for ages. Like, in fact, in one of the other shootouts in the bar, they all just stand with their guns out, shooting at each other, not moving, not flinching. It's really artificial in that sense. Just like, just no moving, no ducking, no hiding, just bang, 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 bang. I've never been in a shootout, so maybe that's how it's supposed to go down. But it struck me as there wasn't enough panic in anyone's eyes.
Well, there isn't, like, no one, even the kind of bystanders in this film don't have reactions to anything that's happening other than, let's stare off screen. Even, like, the kind of just people in the lift who have nothing to do with it, who are still alive, are just kind of, like, just kind of standing there, kind of looking.
Yeah. It's almost like it's all being imagined by B. Takeshi, and it's just him having a weird fantasy, and he bothered to direct it, it seems. It's just odd. It's kind of just sort of artificial. It may be something I'd criticise, but then is it style and trying to say something? I'm not sure. There's a weird, like, another bit where, because there are pedestrians and civilians who aren't gang-affiliated in the film, and there's another moment where it's quite funny, where one of the higher up guys in Takeshi's group is making a phone call, and he's a bit agitated that it took all the money, and he just sort of gives a row to the guy who owns the shop and says he'd kill him if it happens again, just because, like, he put money in it and he's kept it, you know. I just like those bits, man. They're funny. But basically the lift thing, which is what we're talking about, was like the thinning out of the numbers, and leave basically Takeshi, his character, and one of the younger boys who I think likes grenades. That's all I really recall. You know, he's one of the key group, but there's not much to the characters other than, oh, that guy. Because all we get to see is how they behave in a situation. We don't know about them individually, do we?
No, not really. They state their names when they get recruited early on. Then after that, it's all pretty much just goofing about.
We have no real knowledge of anyone's backstory, which is a kind of interesting thing to... Because no one has backstory at all, really. You know, hardly any of them have names. It's kind of interesting that it's just down to actions and reactions, isn't it?
What's the name of the film that I compared it to when we were watching it?
Oh, I don't know.
Ryan Gosling being very quiet and still.
Oh, drive. Yeah. No, not, this is a bit like that one. That one's a good example. But there is another one, like...
Only God Forgives was the one in particular I saw. The reason I bring it up is because it's very difficult to do a movie where people don't say much and do much, and for you to still find them weirdly engaging. And that, Only God Forgives, is an example of one that really fell down and was awful.
That was all style and hardly any substance and a bit just crass at times with its plot, I thought. I think another film it's like is the film Drive, which is somewhere between slightly humorous, touching, and violent. And I think there is a kind of subgenre of crime movies that is sort of quiet, thoughtful, and full of violence, because, you know, you have to have some violence in a crime film, or it'll just be a nothingness. It'll just be quiet moments of nothing. But it is like those kind of films, yeah, where it's, you're sort of left somewhere between, is it cool and dramatic, or is it just empty of substance, you know?
Mm.
After the lift shootout, basically he has his boss slash the guy who betrayed him, and takes him to like a car where, like, parks a car on like a cliffside, and shoots him in the leg about 3 times to get information out of him, doesn't he? And basically he confesses all that it was all just set up by the bosses to... It was something to do with... They maybe wanted to beat Takeshi out of the way because he was too successful, and they wanted to join with one of their rivals in the area in Okinawa, isn't it? Something like that. Do you guys remember at all?
The main boss, the one above Takahashi, wants to remove his relative who's currently running the area and give it over to Anan instead because he can get a better deal.
Yeah, because the Anan clan is the one they're feuding with, and basically they shouldn't deal with them because they're not relatives, but they want to, and they want to use this as an excuse to wipe out a bunch of, you know, gang members they're not interested in having anymore.
Mm.
Which includes Beat Takeshi, which is not cool with Beat Takeshi because he's like, I got guns! And I'm angry now because everyone's dead. And he basically decides he's going to get the bosses. They're going to have, they have a meeting, all the higher-ups, and he infiltrates that. I think the young guy helps him cut off the power, and then he's got a window of opportunity to go in with his machine gun, and we get the nice outside shot where they just, you know, flicker a light on and off to signify people are being shot. Although they do cut in and show you him shooting people Scarface style. But again, it's very still and, like, slightly unnaturalistically standing there shooting the gun. But he kind of executes all them and actually gets out, which, you know, is not usually the way these things go. It wasn't a suicide mission, apart from later, where he does commit suicide, which I didn't quite understand. Like, the young kid's told to go away, isn't he? And then Beat Takeshi succeeds in killing them all, probably now a marked man. And then he drives his little blue car that's been a little point of the film we haven't talked about, back almost to the girl who's waiting for him, and then commits suicide.
It was an odd little moment. I liked it because it was a little ambiguous. Like, before the scene where he's shooting everyone up, the young guy comes back to the car and is like, don't forget to fuel up on the way back. Even though there's kind of there's definitely subtext there where it's like, okay, you're probably not coming back from this.
Yeah, and it's a jokey reference to earlier. I think the guy joshed him earlier about filling up the car with petrol in a different scene. And that, like, Beat Takeshi's presumably a bad driver because there's a car crash we don't quite see. And he says he's a driver and stuff earlier, and it's sort of a reference to the car thing from previous in the story.
So, when you cut to after the shootout, when you see the car coming back, you're like, oh, okay, he's like survived it. And then later on, you see him like parked up at the side, and you can just kind of see his blood-stained like clothes, and you're not quite sure, like, is he alive, is he dead, is he hurt, is he going to die anyway, why has he stopped? And then the kind of suicide kind of leaves it all kind of in the air and ambiguous as to what really went down.
And then just down the road slightly is this woman waiting for him, just staring out into the road, because, you know, we haven't had enough staring, and she's hoping he's going to come back. She presumes, I guess, that he may die from this, but he at least made it far enough to get nearly there. And like you said, I hadn't noticed that he was already either covered in blood or already bleeding. So maybe he was just, you know, he knew he was going to die. But I thought perhaps it was, he knew he didn't want to get her in trouble. So I don't know. There was a lot of ambiguity, but you could read it many ways. Did you think, Abby, that he chose to commit suicide rather than causing more trouble for her, or couldn't go through with normality, or what did you think?
Well, he had said earlier that he was very tired and that he wanted to get out of business. And then at another point he had said that you get to a certain point where you're so scared of everything that you wish you were dead.
Yeah.
So I put it down to something like that, where he was in the position now where he was going to be basically hunted down.
Yeah.
For ever, potentially. And he just would rather face death
than try and have one last sunset with her or something. Mm. But yeah, he could have been shot, couldn't he, as well?
Yeah. Plus there's just the fact that, you know, everyone pretty much that he knows or has worked with or is friends with is now dead.
Yeah.
And he has pretty much had his revenge.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of like there's nowhere left for him to go narratively in the film.
Mm.
So yeah, that's kind of where the narrative comes to an end, and we're left going, oh, that was a weird, slow but dramatic journey with the Yakuza. Okay. Like, you know, you're kind of left out of it feeling like you've gone on a similar emotional ride, or you've fallen asleep, whichever has happened. But, you know, I think overall, I think it succeeded in doing whatever it was after. There are maybe some flaws in there technically. Maybe some stuff is too, like, drawn out and long, or too trying to be clever when it's not that interesting. But mostly I found it compelling. And it's down to the character acting, I think.
Mm.
What do you guys make of it? You agree with me, but do you have further thoughts on it? And don't forget, guys, we need a rating system, so, you know, maybe beach activities?
Sure.
Ways to kill time that are symbolically like this film. I don't know. Babby, you were saying.
I have a lot of time for movies that get the fundamentals right. I'm very forgiving of niggly bits if they were clearly going in the right direction, which I think they really were with this film.
Hmm.
There was some beautifully observed moments. The story was refreshingly simple for a crime movie. And just, it's engaging. Even if you can't really articulate why, which I can't, you do just enjoy watching it.
That's it. When people are quiet and don't say much and only do little things, you do just get drawn into what they're doing and you feel like you're sitting there just watching it unfold with them, you know?
Hmm.
What about you, Anthony? How did you come out overall in regard to this film?
Well, I did end up enjoying it, despite its general kind of soporific feel throughout the film. The kind of sleepy, dreamlike quality that it has.
Mm.
But no, I liked it. It's got some nice stylistic touches, which reminded me of like Tarantino or Sergio Leone.
Mm.
Kind of like spaghetti westerns. Yeah, it's a strange one, which I guess isn't that strange, seeing as it's a Japanese film, as we kind of expect the slightly odd.
And it's more grounded. And it's more grounded than other Beat Takeshi films get a bit like, what was the point of all that? You know? Like, you're kind of questioning what's going on, whereas there is an obvious narrative to this one. Anyway.
Yeah, but like Abby said, it does end up being quite engaging, and I suppose you're there yourself as an audience member going like, well, what would I do if I was bored out of my mind? Yes, I'd probably be doing all this stupid stuff.
Yeah. So, a success, but a weird one, and not for everyone, and you have to be expecting the right kind of thing, or have the right, I don't know. You have to at least like this kind of thing. It's not just everyone's film of choice, is it?
Mm.
It falls into that weird, quiet crime movie that's sort of more thought-provoking and less about, you know, slick dialogue and more about how people behave.
Yeah, less about the actual crimes and more the people who are doing them.
It's very sort of workman-like in that respect. It's not quite the word I was looking for, but how in Western cinema we sort of glamorize violence a lot, whereas in this one it was sort of, it's just a job you can have, is to be in crime.
Yeah, everyone's not just cool. Everyone is normal, and they also have guns and shoot people occasionally. Like, it's just sort of a weird look at what Beat Takeshi sees as a kind of the crime genre, I guess. Mm. His little take on the Yakuza mythology. I think there is a cult audience for it, but maybe not a mainstream audience.
Mm.
And I think if, for me, I was to think of a film bin style rating system that makes no sense and is a pointless attempt at metaphor, it is Bulls, a particularly dramatic game of Bulls with life or death. Life or death Bulls, where it is a bit boring Bulls, but it is a fun beach activity to just toss a bunch of like water-filled balls, I think that's what they are, and roll them towards a jack and try and win. It's a little bit like slow and dull, but if your life's at stake, you know, that's kind of like the film, dramatic, but still killing time on a beach. I don't know. You guys got anything better?
Yeah. Do you know those machines that they have on beaches sometimes where you put 20 pence in and you can look through it like, and it zooms in and everything? It's like one of those, just like a leisurely go on one of those where you're just like, you pan over to the beach and then there's some people flying a kite and then there's some people digging a hole and then you look over to the sea and it's all very calm and pretty. And it's just like kind of like that.
When he beat Takeshi, dreams he's going to shoot himself in the head while you're doing that somehow.
Yeah. So you have this kind of like quiet, kind of distant stance and you can choose to see these little things that maybe you wouldn't notice before.
If you hadn't paid 20 pence.
Yeah.
No, I think that's an okay thing to say. Abby, what about you?
I am going with one of my preferred beach activities when I was a child, which was just digging a hole. Every now and again, you just really feel like digging a hole. And even though it's quite routine and there isn't much to it, it can be very relaxing and engaging.
And satisfying at the end as well.
Yeah.
And when you're done digging your hole and all the water's filled in from the sea, you can shoot yourself in the head and fall into it. And we can pan slowly out as the tide goes in. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it is like digging a hole, Abby. You're right. And before I dig myself into a hole any further, let's say goodbye and finish off the podcast.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. See you next time.
Bye. What's the Japanese for goodbye?
Sayonara.
Sayonara, everyone.
Sayonara.
Indeed.